Welcome back to the Homeschool Conversation podcast, where we talk all things homeschool. Have you ever wondered how a homeschooled student turns out? You know, like the ones that were homeschooled their whole lives and now they're adults. Where are they now? Well, I was lucky enough to find Summer, who is now in her 30s and living in Hawaii. And she is going to share all about her life as an unschooled kid, along with her three brothers and how successful they are today. So if you've ever wondered about unschooling, I encourage you to take a listen in on today's episode. Enjoy. I know you've never been to school and that you basically have still found yourself a really successful life, somehow got stuck in Hawaii running a business. I mean, boo-hoo for you. No, right. So I'm just curious. I wanted to know how you ended up in Hawaii and how you, you know, how that journey happened for you developing a business.
Well, I didn't move out here on my own. It was with my mom, my stepdad, and my three brothers. And we moved to Kauai to start. I'm on Maui now, so I've done a little bit of island hopping. We lived on Kauai for, it was about 10 years, and that's where I discovered glass bead making from my best friend who was homeschooled. Her sisters and her mom were all super, super creative. They did a lot of crafting, a lot of jewelry making and sewing and just all kinds of arts and crafts. And the mom actually got into glass bead making. She took a class and then she fell in love with it and she got her own equipment. And I used to go and spend days at their house at a time and doing the crafting stuff with them. I learned how to make jewelry, wire wrapping, beading, that kind of thing. And then I got on the torch one day. I was about 14 and I was like completely obsessed. Like I was enthralled. Just right away, like it was the most fascinating thing ever. And so it kind of just went from there. We ended up moving to Colorado for a little while and we moved back to the islands, and that's when I got into it a lot more. My mom could see that this was like a real passion for me, and so she invested in and bought me my own equipment. Me and my friend went in on some equipment together and set up a little studio and started selling our handmade glass beads and jewelry at a local farmer's market, kind of a craft fair farmer's market.
And this is when you were a teenager?
This is when I was a teenager. I was about 15.
Okay.
Yeah. when I really started selling my work. And it was just a weekly farmer's market, so it was sort of a, you know, fun pocket money as a teenager. And then over the years, I mean, I always had my bead making, but I did some nannying, I did some babysitting, things like that. And eventually, when I was in my early 20s is kind of when I started taking it on as a career.
Okay. Did your mom ever ask you that type of question? Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or
no.
That type of thing?
No.
That's interesting, because I feel like that's I feel like children as young as 4 or 5 are asked that, like, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I know. I actually think that's really a sad thing to do to a child.
Yeah.
Honestly, because it totally takes them out of where they are now and who they are now and the present moment and experiencing their life as it is now. And we start making them project way into the future before they can really even they're not even hardly grasping time, and we're completely just taking it out of the moment into some fictional future, and they just make stuff up to answer the question
often. Yeah, no, and I remember being asked that question, and I remember thinking that I had to pick something, and then if I picked it, then I kind of had to follow through with that, and then it never even occurred to me until now, like I'm 30, I'm the same age as you are.
Yeah.
It never even occurred to me until like now that, wait a second, I can change my mind from what I chose, or I can just be pursuing multiple passions at the same time. And I feel like that option is never even put on the table for us in the public school system. It's like, do you want to be a police officer? Do you want to be a teacher?
Exactly.
Do you want to be a doctor or a lawyer? Like, pick one of the choices. Mm-hmm. It's never like all of the above or none of the above. It's like, pick something. And so
it's always these things that kind of fit into these little boxes too. Like, they're very, what do you call it? things with titles. And
yeah.
There's so many other things to do in the world that maybe don't have a title or a degree, but we don't necessarily think of those as options. And there's so many options that you can't even imagine. You know, you can't even imagine. You might not get exposed to something until way later in life and then totally change your path. So how can you possibly know?
Right.
You know, where your life is gonna take you, or what you're gonna discover, and then your interests can change.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess your mom obviously really trusted that process. Do you know what made her choose this for you? Had she ever told you why she didn't send you to school, or did that conversation ever come up at all?
Yeah, we talked about it a lot, and we still talk about it a lot, actually. And she's here right now. Mom, why didn't you put me in school?
Oh, I love that she's right there. That's perfect. Right from the horse's mouth.
We do discuss that quite a bit, actually. And it's not like one thing. There's not like just this one thing I can just put a simple answer to. Yeah, so it was before I came along. I'm the third one. She didn't put my older brothers in school either. But it was a step by step. It wasn't just like overnight she had this whole well-rounded philosophy and made this grand decision. It was more like little by little. And it just came as part of how she parented. Like the school, not putting us in school was just part of the greater picture, you could say.
Yeah.
So it came really, I think, from her being extremely connected to us and really, really having a super close relationship and wanting to keep that and feeling like that relationship was extremely important to all of our mental, psychological, emotional health and well-being. And I think that not putting us in school was more about taking care of our and giving us a chance to really something else, someone else's idea of how we should be. Yeah, she's saying right now that she wanted to raise her own kids. And sending them to school is like letting some random stranger, is like sending your kids off to somebody you don't even know, and letting someone else decide what your kids should know and shaping them into society's idea of how people should be and what they should do.
Right. It's funny that you say that.
She wanted us to have the freedom to make our own choices, to make our own decisions.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, because that's like that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me. Was I sent my son to kindergarten, and one day he came back home and he called me by his teacher's name by accident. He called me like her name by accident instead of saying mom. And I was like, did you just call me, you know, whatever? And he was like, well, I am with her like a million hours more a day than you are, you know, like she does get to see me all day long. So I'm so used to calling her. How many times in a day do I even say your name, mom? I say her name like a million times more than yours.
Way more.
And my mom heart just like sunk to the ground. I'm like, he's only 5 years old, but he's so right. She is getting to see all the precious moments of his light bulbs going off when he finally gets something, or he reads his first word, or he finally figures out 2 + 2 = 4. It's like she's getting to see those light bulb moments. And here I am at home drudging through the homework and the projects. And it's like, this isn't, I don't know. There was something about that moment for me.
Yeah, you wanted to be there for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's beautiful now because I get to be, but, you know, I still think about, I'm like, there's so many moments that she got to have that I missed out on, but, you know.
And to be there for them too, because it's like, if you're not there and you're not connected with them through all those hours of the day, you don't know what they're going through. You don't know what experiences they're having. You don't know what kind of upsets are occurring. And then they come home and they've been away from you for so many hours. And then they're like, I used to see this a lot when I was babysitting, actually, because parents would be gone for hours and the kid was oftentimes, you know, fine, as people would describe. And then the mom would get home and the kids would just freak out because having so much time apart, like reconnecting can be really difficult. Mm-hmm. But when you're together, you stay connected.
Right.
And so then you're there, you're connected in with your child's state of mind. And so you know what they're going through, you know what they're dealing with, you know how they're feeling. You've witnessed the challenges they had in that day, and you were there for them, and they were able to come to you and hug you and get comfort from you.
Yeah.
And we all want that. We all want that. Everybody wants that. You know, everyone's searching for a husband or a wife. We want that partner. We want that person to be there for us. And yet we send our kids away and we deny them that thing that we want and searching for ourselves.
And I think, and I wonder if your mom even like would know the answer to this, but I think the reason people do that is because they worry that if they keep them home, they won't be ready, that they won't be okay. And I mean, obviously I wonder, did your mom ever worry about that? Did she ever think, okay, if I keep them home and I keep them safe with me, will I harm them in some way? Will they not be like prepared? Am I qualified to do this? You know, that type of thing. I wonder if she ever had those thoughts. And, you know, like, I also wonder, I know you have three other siblings. Mm-hmm. I wonder what directions their lives went into. And I just, so many questions I have for you.
Right. Well, the first part of that is, I would say it's not like we're kept in a basement or anything.
I know.
It's actually, I feel that we had a lot more involvement and interaction with the real world than kids in school do. So it wasn't like she was doing it to isolate us at all. That's not where it came from. And what was the other part of that question?
The other part of it was, I threw like five questions at you. The other part of it, I just wondered, did she think that wasn't qualified for it?
Did she worry? I don't think so. She really, really knew that we were okay.
Yeah, she really trusted it.
Wasn't even that she trusted, she knew.
Yeah.
She didn't have to trust because she knew. Kids grow into how they're seen, and they grow into how their parents view them. We believe our parents, so we believe our parents, and it's not just what they say to us, it's everything, because it's how you see your children is going to dictate how you treat them, how you speak to them, how you interact with them. And if you're coming from a place of seeing your child as being perfect, whole, and complete, as being capable and intelligent and wonderful and amazing, then why would you force them to do things that are not natural to them?
Right.
Because if you see them that way, then you know that their basic nature is good.
Right. Right. That's powerful. I feel like that's really powerful.
And she could see too. I mean, it's easy to see in babies. We see them learn how to walk and talk. With little to no encouragement. In fact, you probably couldn't stop them if you tried. And to her, that was just proof that children want to thrive. It's human nature to want to thrive, to want to be happy, and to pursue your dreams and your passions. I think she felt that that was natural instinct.
Yeah.
So she felt that her job was just to not take that away.
Right.
So now, it wasn't even that she was doing this to give us something. It was more that she was doing this to not take it away.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. So now your siblings, all of you had the same education. Like, I don't want to say education because it's not really about education. You guys all had the same lifestyle of learning, where your whole life was just freedom to learn whatever you wanted, whenever you wanted to learn it. So now, where are all of your siblings now in terms of their passions? And I wonder if, like, a lot of the things you saw them do as kids, are they pursuing that now, or did it go in different directions? I'm just curious.
Yeah, we are all very unique and we all pursued very different paths, I would say. My oldest brother, Garrett, I think he had it probably the hardest growing up with the family. So my dad's side of the family was extremely disapproving and put a lot of pressure on us and was really scared, had a lot of fear, and that was really difficult. He was the first grandchild on both sides of the family, so he had a lot of attention and focus on him. And my dad's family is really very conservative, very traditional in a sense, and they were just absolutely terrified that we were going to be, you know, super weird and different and socially inadequate. And,
oh, so you guys, you know, still did move. Yes, you guys faced the death.
The house, and we'd be, yeah. So we, and so my older brothers, I think, were more negatively affected by that than I was. Because that makes you self-conscious when you're spending time around people that are so worried about you. You start to worry about yourself. But by the time I came along, my mom, my parents divorced when I was about 2. And I didn't have as much time with that side of the family as my older brothers did. So I don't feel that I was as negatively affected. But to answer your question, my oldest brother is a sailor, actually. He manages a charter company in San Francisco Bay, and he's been obsessed with sailboats probably since he could say the word sailboat. And that was basically why he learned anything, was because he was in love with sailboats. So he learned any kind of math was so that he could build boats, and he learned reading so he could read books about sailing around the world, and it all had to do with his love of sailboats. And now he manages a charter company in the Bay, and he has his captain's license, and he races, and he works on boats all the time, and he absolutely loves it. And he's married and has a 4-year-old now, and he's doing great. Wow. So he's doing what he absolutely loves.
Yeah.
And then my second brother, Clay, well, and Garrett actually did do some community college for a while until he realized that it wasn't going to help him in his particular interests. And then Clay, my second brother, he also did some community college for a while, and they both actually tested in like the highest percentile in their entrance exams without ever having done a test or being graded or anything. So I think it's interesting when people go, well, how will they know how to take a test? And it's like, well, you learn that when it's time to take a test.
Yeah.
And they did fine with that. And then Clay actually went on to UC Berkeley. He got accepted to UC Berkeley, and then he transferred and went and finished school in New York and has a degree in political science. But he actually was working at Apple Computers while he put himself through school, and then he got poached by another startup company, and now he's working for them. And I honestly don't even know what it is that he does. It's like some super techie thing. So he's a computer guy. He works from home. He has a really comfortable life. He's also like kind of more the intellectual in the family, I would say, and he's really good at saving money and like making really excellent financial decisions.
Different interests that your siblings had. It seems like you guys have had those interests since you were younger. Yeah.
I mean, some of them you can't really tell what they're going to turn into. Some interests might look one way at one point, but later on you discover that it actually was for something else.
Right. It was like so, preparing of your heart and your mind to pursue that passion.
Yeah. And we all went through so many different interests all the time. You know, there were weeks where I'd be obsessed with one thing and then I would never want to look at it again. So just because a kid shows an interest, like, does not mean anything about the future. And they could get something from pursuing that interest for whatever amount of time that actually gets used later in a totally different way.
Right. So how did your mom do that? I mean, like, how did she do the topic of encouragement versus manipulative learning? How did she encourage you guys to pursue your interests without, like, being manipulative with you?
Yeah, that's a good, I like that question, because I've lately been talking to more unschool parents and doing different coaching calls and just interviews and questions and things like this. And this is a topic I've been kind of stewing on lately, is what was so different about how she did that versus what I'm seeing even in the unschool community. And I don't know, it's a tricky one, because I think that maybe we need to reevaluate what we think of as encouragement and what we think of as support, because we think of being encouraging and supportive to a child very, very differently than we think of being encouraging and supporting to a friend. And there, I think there's a really big difference between active in what I would call invasive encouragement and support versus passive or like tender, is it maybe a good word, encouragement and support. So it's hard to describe because it's like, I would say, yeah, my mom was extremely supportive and encouraging, but it also never felt pushy. It never felt, it was almost like she was never, it wasn't like coming with an agenda. So it wasn't like she was constantly looking for opportunities.
Yeah,
she wasn't like watching us and waiting for an opening to jump in, you know, which is what I'm seeing a lot of unschool moms do. And it comes out of love, it comes out of care, but it also comes out of fear. And my mom was not afraid for us. So it came from a very different place. It came more like having a loving and supportive friend.
Yeah.
So she didn't go out of her way to like be encouraging. It was she was just very natural with us. She was just very natural. She was a friend and a partner. So she wasn't like, it's a hard one to describe.
I know what you mean, because I feel like
I find that it gets misunderstood when I've tried to describe it before.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like she was never doing anything and she wasn't just like whatever, but she also wasn't constantly like trying to be supportive. Like she was being supportive on purpose. It was like she was just being our friend.
Yeah. She was just genuinely willing and encouraged. She was just genuinely willing, I guess, to participate and collaborate with you rather than trying to lay out like a list of goals you have to hit and
to
be interested in. So is that what you're seeing in the homeschool community in terms of like, what are some examples of manipulative learning you're seeing?
Well, I find, you know, people talking about teachable moments and opportunities to create teachable moments, or just jumping in when you can see an opportunity for a teachable moment. And I find that to be very invasive. And I actually wrote a piece not too long ago that I posted on my Facebook page about a personal experience I had with my grandma, where she was always constantly trying to make teachable moments and take advantage of teachable moments. And I wrote about what that really feels like, because I have the memories, I have the comparisons. A lot of people don't have the comparison, but I do. I remember what it was like to be treated as an equal, as an intelligent human being. And I have the from my mom, and then I have the memories of what it was like to be treated like I was a silly creature that needed to be stuffed full of other people's knowledge.
Wow.
So
that's so powerful.
And it was like, often I think what happens is people are, well, there's creating teachable moments, which I find to be very manipulative, because then you're trying to steer your child in a certain direction, because then you feel like you are better than them, you know better than them what they need, and you are trying to direct them to be interested in something you think they should be interested in, or you're trying to take an interest they have and turn it into an educational experience. And I certainly don't want any friends that do that to me, and I have never met anyone that wishes their friends were trying to make them learn things all the time. No one enjoys being around someone or feels good about themselves around someone who is constantly trying to manipulate you into learning something.
Yeah.
Feel good about yourself when someone is treating you as if you are incapable of making your own choices, or as if you are incapable of learning from your own experiences without being told what you're learning. So I find that oftentimes, like, if I'm around a child, I've been around a lot of kids, and I used to babysit and nanny a lot, so I've witnessed a lot of interactions between parents and kids, and I've interacted with kids a lot myself. And I'll see a child that's interested in something, say they pick up a flower and they're, you know, pulling off the petals and they're like discovering this flower, and toddlers are just constantly discovering. And then an adult walks up and they go, "Oh, what's that? Is that a flower? What color is that? Oh, is it pretty? Do you know what kind of flower that is?" And it's like, you can watch the kid's face just kind of be like, what? Like, why are you talking right now? Like, leave me alone.
It's like they're being treated like a bucket that needs to be filled with a hose.
Yeah, yeah. When if you leave that kid alone, like, you don't know what they might learn something you didn't even think of engaging with that flower. So if they are given the opportunity to have those quiet moments to themselves where they're actually exploring and having their own experience, it can be just such this beautiful unfolding. And I think oftentimes we jump in and we interrupt that process before the kid has a chance to absorb whatever information they might absorb from it on their own.
And we probably are even limiting them, like from listening to you just describe that one simple example, I think of like the fact that we could be limiting them to only notice the color and the type of flower.
Yeah, when they exactly.
could be thinking about the bees that are coming to pollinate this flower and the different, they could be seeing things on a much higher level than what we're giving them the credit for. And then we just knock them down to the first tier when they may have been at a whole higher level than we gave them the credit.
Exactly. For. Yeah. And that's my point, is that we are telling them what they should be learning from a thing.
So then
we're telling them what is to be learned from something, when it's like they might learn something new from that thing that you didn't think of. And I think that's where, I mean, if you look at people like the great minds throughout history, they are people who thought outside the box. They're people who discovered something new.
Yeah, so true.
And you really don't know what's going on in your child's mind or how, you know, what they're really seeing.
Yeah.
You don't know how they're seeing things or what they're seeing, and they're totally enveloped in their own incredible learning process. And oftentimes I think in that desire to help, we oftentimes interrupt, we invade their mental space.
Yeah,
and
we disrupt
their natural process.
Yeah. So then, since you did have that experience with your mom where she wasn't manipulative with you, what can you recall, like a specific memory or time that she kind of collaborated with you and just was alongside the ride with you? Or was it just like a general everyday life for you?
It was general everyday life. I mean, I could say like vague examples being, you know, like I had a pretty strong interest when I was little in plants. And I wanted to know what plants I could eat. And I liked being able to pick leaves and eat them, like when I was a toddler, you know? And then when I was about, I think I was maybe 8 years old, and I think my mom met someone who knew an herbalist and who was like offering a class to homeschoolers. And my mom was like, is that something you'd want to do? And I was like, yes. And so, you know, she offered something because I was interested, but it wasn't like, she didn't push it on me. She just offered it. It's kind of like if you have a friend who's interested in a certain topic and you're like, oh, hey, I have a cool book if you want to read it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was more like that. And then it was like, yeah, I want to take that class. So my brothers jumped in on it too. We all took a weekly herbalism class, and I still retain a lot of the knowledge I learned at 8 years old from that class.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
reading was the same thing. I mean, that's one of the biggest concerns. People are like, well, how, you know, if no one makes you read, how are you ever going to learn how to read? And my mom believed that, you know, naturally kids will want to do the thing. They want to be able to do the things that they see other people doing. And my mom was really into reading. She had tons of books all the time. She read all the time. So she just thought, oh, you'll get curious at some point. And we all did at very different points and for very different reasons. And for me, it was Harry Potter. And I've told this story a bunch of times, but basically she was reading Harry Potter out loud. And I got so into the story that I didn't want to wait for story time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to read the book myself. And then my little brother started reading it on his own. And I was like, he's not going to get ahead of me. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to know what happens too. So then it was like, okay, I need to read this book. And so mom sat down with me because I asked her to.
Yeah.
You know, I asked for help, and she dropped whatever she was doing and she sat down. She said, okay, what do you want to know? And she didn't sit down with an agenda or a plan or a method. I think that's the other thing too, is oftentimes we have these preconceived ideas of how to teach. But if you wait for the child to ask questions, they might have a very different way of learning than you have of teaching. So she let me tell her what I wanted to learn.
Wow.
So it was like, well, What do you want to know? Well, I want to know how to read. Okay. So do you want to start? Where do you want to start? What page do you want to start? Okay. Wait, so we're going to start here. Okay. So this word, honey, like, you know, these are the sounds. And, you know, we went through it like that. And then I read the whole rest of the book that week. And then I devoured every single book I could get my hands on after that for years. I read 6 hours a day. And my mom would be like, honey, you really should go outside.
I mean, you live in Hawaii, you should go outside. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's incredible because I feel
So there are things that are not necessarily about education, but I feel like sometimes people assume that my mom just like never made us do anything. But there's like, you got to brush your teeth, you got to wash your dishes. Like, we had basic stuff in our household to keep our family happy and operating well together. And so, you know, my mom also felt like it was her job to take care of our physical health and well-being. So when your kid is sitting for 6 or 8 hours a day and then you're acting super weird after, you know, she was like, I think you really need some fresh air. Like, really, can you please go outside for a little while? Like, that's okay. It's okay sometimes to like encourage in certain ways like that when you feel like something's actually really negatively affecting your child. I feel like that's when it is an appropriate time to step in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you feel like something's harmful, and I don't want to skip. Oh, I wanted to make that point just because I have been misunderstood in that before, where people are like, so I should just let them, you know, play video games all day. And I know that some people do that, and that, I'm not judging that necessarily. I'm just saying that as a parent, if you feel like that thing is harmful or negatively affecting your child, or it's, basically that, then it's okay sometimes to step in and be like, we need to work this out. But my mom never did it as an authority figure. She did it more as a loving, caring friend, and did it with us, worked it out with us. She didn't just like impose rules that she made up. It was really very democratic, our household. You know, we made our daily rhythm and our household rules. We kind of developed those together.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible because I feel like I've definitely been guilty of that myself. Like, my son is obsessed with Minecraft. So I'm like, okay, we're going to get all the Minecraft classes. We're going to get all the Minecraft workbooks. And sometimes I would have him earn the amount of time he can play on Minecraft by how many pages he does in his workbook. And it doesn't feel good to do.
Bribery.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good to do because I know I'm bribing him. And he straight up told me one day recently, he's like, you know, Mom, I'm doing the workbook pages to earn the time on Minecraft because you said I can get 10 minutes for every page I do, but I'm not learning anything from the workbook. So I'm just doing
he's just trying to get through it.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right,
and then bribery, I mean, bribery is an interesting thing too, because I feel like people use bribery without really questioning how that's actually affecting their child psychologically in the long run.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting thing to look at. Is if your kids are going to treat people the way that you treat them.
Yeah.
And I don't really enjoy being around people who are like, well, I'll do this for you if you do this thing for me. Like, that's not loving. That's not like a kind, loving, feel good interaction. That's like a tit for tat kind of thing. Yeah. And I see that all the time in our culture, in our society, that people don't just love and give freely. We're always like, well, what am I going to get out of it?
Yeah.
And kids develop this, what am I going to get out of it thing, because their parents make them do things. And so kids are like, well, I'll do this thing to get something. And so then they don't do the thing for the sake of the thing. And then they don't absorb it either.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of like snowballs into different, I'm not saying that does that to every kid. I just think that it can develop some unhealthy patterns.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, it's probably coming from a place of love. Like, your intention is.
It totally is. I don't want to criticize, because I know that it comes from love, and oftentimes it comes from misunderstanding, and it's how you were treated, and it's what you know, and you didn't know that you could find another way. And so, it's not that anyone is bad for doing that. It's just that I think it's really good to question these things and see if you can find a better way that's more cooperative.
Yeah, Yeah. I mean, I feel like, I know you had also mentioned about school parents versus unschool parents. There's just a totally different way that they approach their kids, and that has a long-term effect on their mental health. And I feel like what we're talking about now goes hand in hand with that. But
it does, yeah. But it, you know, to me, it's not just school versus not school, because there's a lot of people that aren't putting their kids in school that are perpetuating really unhealthy behavioral patterns, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's,
I mean, I'm not an expert. I'm not like a therapist or anything, but just from my personal point of view. And I think we don't realize there's so much that's unconscious in how we relate to children.
Yeah.
And we put them in the separate category. We categorize them as less than human. We treat them as a minority class, and they're severely mistreated.
Yeah.
It's age. There's still parents that aren't putting their kids in school that are still doing a lot of the same things that are happening in school.
Yeah.
The same type of treatment. But it goes back to that same thing I was talking about, how my mom sees her children. And it comes from that. So it comes from that place. It comes from how you view your children and how you feel, who you see them as, and what you feel they really are deep down. Like, if you believe that human beings are born lacking, then you will spend your whole life trying to fix them.
Right.
And so if you believe that you are inadequate and you are lacking, it's going to be really hard for you to let your children be free if you don't feel like you can be free and okay. Yeah. So I don't know if I'm making much sense here, but...
No, you are. I mean, I think that the question to ask, I mean, for any people who are listening to this episode, I think the question to ask yourself is, how do you see your children? Like, are your children a project for you?
Yeah.
To work
yeah
on.
Exactly, a project, because that's exactly what it was. Because for me growing up, it's like I didn't feel like anyone was trying to fix me or change me.
Yeah,
I felt like I knew that my mom knew that I was wonderful, and I knew that because of how she treated me, because she treated me that way, like she saw me that way, and so she treated me that way. And and that, like, I grew into that. That's why I feel like that's where a lot of my confidence comes from. That's how I'm able to just do things. People were like, well, how did you just do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I just did. You know, it's like, yeah. I just did. I don't question myself maybe as much as a lot of people, because I wasn't constantly questioned. My mom didn't doubt me. She didn't doubt my ability to make my own choices. Like, she didn't doubt the wisdom in me to make my own choices. She knew that I had the wisdom.
Right.
And she trusted me and she believed in me. And that's just beautiful. I feel like children grow into that. But you can say that you believe that about your children, but then you're not living it.
Yeah. And I guess that's like, as we start to close out, I guess that's what I wonder, my question to you. And, you know, I know a lot of people who are listening are probably wondering. So then what is a way that you can truly reset yourself and try something different? What would be a way that you can see your kids in a way that's going to really contribute to the greater goal, which is, I mean, that is the greater goal, is we want them to grow to be productive members of society.
Well, you want them to grow into themselves, to know themselves, to be themselves, to have confidence and independence and joy and love. And you need to show that to them now. And it's kind of like I think one of the biggest questions, because it's an ongoing process. It's not like someone can't give you like a magic pill and you wake up tomorrow and be the perfect mom.
Right.
It's like, my mom's not perfect. You know, she stumbled too. She struggled and she stumbled. And I think that that's just the nature of life in general. But I think that what's really important is that you're constantly inquiring in yourself and questioning where you're coming from.
Yeah.
All the time in your interactions. And I don't mean like second guessing and doubting and beating yourself up. I don't mean that at all. You need to be kind and patient to yourself, and you need to forgive yourself, and you need to also be willing to apologize to your kid. Be like, honey, I'm really sorry. I totally screwed up. You know, I got scared for a minute, and it's okay. I'm sorry. You know, like that that's amazing. If you want your children to be humble, you need to be humble. If you want your children to be vulnerable, you need to be vulnerable. And I also want to just point out that most parents want to be a safe space for their children. And if you want your children to keep coming to you and asking you questions, I had a conversation with someone the other day and they said that their daughter was having trouble telling time on an analog clock. And so her daughter asked her what time it was one day and she turned it into a teachable moment. And I was like, if you want your daughter to keep coming to you and asking questions, she needs to feel safe. Yeah. And I don't go to people who are going to make me feel uncomfortable and self-conscious and put on the spot. I don't go to those people for help.
Right.
You know, the people I go to for help are like, I go to my mom because I know that she's going to be loving and compassionate. She's not going to try and make it into an opportunity to change me.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I think a lot of parents can listen a lot more and talk a lot less.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like something I've been becoming more interested in, which I've been seeing a lot of great benefit from, is allowing my kids to teach me things. Like, I've been asking them if they can teach me something, you know, mm-hmm. something that they clearly know a lot more about. So as much as Minecraft is not my interest, instead of me mm-hmm. treating it like, oh, it's this boring game, I've been asking more questions. I'm like, you know, what is this pickaxe? What do you use this for? What is this sword? Mm-hmm. Can you teach me about this? And, you know, I've been having him do that. And my daughter, who's 7, she's really into baking and art and all that stuff. So I have her teach me things about that too. She gives me even multiple choice tests. She asked me, like, she's like, can you name what a baby dolphin is, or what a baby kangaroo is, or what a baby this is? And I'm like, oh my gosh, no. I'm like, I need you to teach me this. And the confidence that I saw rising up in her, I was like, wow, she feels so good that she's able to be on the other side.
Yeah. Well, because kids want to contribute too. I mean, we all feel good when we contribute.
Yeah.
And kids want to contribute too. And I think giving them the opportunity is really beautiful. And we learn so much from teaching. I mean, I thought I was doing fine with my glass bead making. And then I taught at my first class and realized I didn't know what I was talking about. And I learned so much from teaching.
Yeah.
And now I've had several students. I've taught many people, actually. But you learn a lot from teaching, and I think it's wonderful when you shut up and listen more.
Yeah. And you know, feel like, how often do we even give kids a chance? How often do we even see them to be well informed enough about something and give them that opportunity to teach? I feel like as a
or even just to value their contribution.
Yeah.
Like, oftentimes kids have some really smart stuff to say and you don't even hear it, you know, because you're busy about what you can say.
Yeah.
And I think that we all are learning together all the time, and kids are no exception.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for parents especially, just to like slow down, you know, what are we in such a hurry for? Like, where are you trying to get? Like, yeah. Slow down. Your kids are going to be gone before you know it. And it's like, that's what my mom really came from, just wanting to be with us and enjoy us and have a positive relationship where there was mutual respect. And in order to have your children respect you, you have to respect your children. So I think you really need to look and see what that looks like, what that means.
Yeah.
And imagine if your partner spoke to you the way you speak to your children. How would that feel? That's a really good thing, I think, to ask yourself. Like, okay, how would I feel if my husband came up to me and said that?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a really good question to ask. But just to always be asking yourself where you're coming from with that. What's your agenda behind that? And is it true? Or is it just an idea that you got from somewhere else, maybe from your childhood, maybe from society, maybe from who knows, you know, that you need to do this thing so that your kid will have this thing, blah, 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 blah. And we take these things to be true because they're so commonly believed, but we're not actually looking and going like, is this actually true right now for me and my child? Mm-hmm. Is it true that they need to do this right now? And at first you'll be like, well, yeah, because someday, blah, blah, blah. But if you look like really closely and you're like, is it true that they need to sit down and do this worksheet right now? No, not right now. Do they need this right now? They don't need this right now. This is not relevant to today. This is not what's happening right now. Because children learn as things are needed in their life. Like, I learned how to read because I needed to learn how to read to fulfill something I wanted for myself.
Right.
And that's how I learned everything. That's how I learned everything. And when there's personal incentive, when there's a personal desire, like, they'll devour something in like 10 times faster or more. Yeah. And it's incredible what kids will absorb when they're personally motivated, when they're not being, when it's not being pushed on them, when they're not being pushed at something.
Yeah. Intrinsic motivation cannot be taught or coached or anything. No. It's like, it really comes.
And I get, you know, people are really worried that, you know, their kids aren't going to learn how to read or write or all these things. And I'm like, you know what? Eventually they will, because what 15-year-old doesn't want to be able to take a driving test?
Yeah.
It's going to happen. At some point, it's going to happen sooner or later. We're just so obsessed in our culture with faster, quicker, better, more now. You know, it's like we're in such a hurry to get somewhere that we miss what's happening right now, and we don't value what's happening right now. And kids are really living in now, and we need to start going into their world and start, instead of trying to like pull them into ours. Yeah. Because your child lives in this incredibly huge, magical, spacious realm of joy and amazingness.
They really do.
And you're trying to pull them out of it into this, like, this world of
boring grown-up world.
Well, yeah, and I just mean like your priorities and your concerns and your, and it's just maybe try and get in your kid's world for a minute, and you might discover something mind-blowing, like amazing, the things that they're learning that you don't even realize because you're too busy focusing on what you think they should be learning.
Yeah.
You're not even noticing what they are learning. And not to like, that's one of the things that I've gotten a little triggered by sometimes, is people like really monitoring their kids' learning too. Like, you know, they can read this many words and they can do this and they can do that. And it's like a washed pot never boils, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, be in your child's world, you know, be with them, discover with them. But at the same time, also, it's like, not be analyzing and evaluating them, because they'll feel that. They feel that. They feel being watched.
Yeah.
You know, we all feel that. No one, most people don't perform well under pressure.
Yeah. I still remember the hot shoulder feeling of my teacher standing over mm-hmm. me, like during tests. They would like watch us while we're taking the test, make sure we're not cheating. And yeah. I'm like, that feels, I for the moment that they're walking past me and looking over my shoulder, I just like stop reading the question. I'm just like waiting for her to walk past me. Yeah. I still remember that feeling, it just to feel like you're being watched and evaluated. It turns off your brain.
It does. It turns off your brain. And I think it's good to remember that and then recognize when you're doing. My mom really lived through all the criticism and how other people saw us and how other people judged us and that kind of thing. And when I talk about, like, I feel like my mom really prioritized our relationship above all else. Mm. And I feel that, to me, the relationship I had with my mom, because some people think like, well, you can't be friends with your kids, you have to be a parent. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the relationship I had with my mom, to me, is more important than anything else on the planet. Like, I would take the relationship I have with my mom over my house, over my dog, over my car, over my career, over anything. I would not lose that. You know, there's nothing more important to me in my life.
And ironically, I feel like because of your relationship, you probably were less likely to lie to her
I mean there was mutual respect, and I feel that it's because of that relationship, it's because of that connection, it's because I felt so accepted and so loved and accepted for who I was and who I am, that allowed me to have the confidence that I do now. So I feel that relationship is what made my life possible the way it is now, my success and any personal qualities that I value about myself and my ability to learn and my ability to adapt. And I mean, I've worked with so many people in the glassblowing world, and I've been told over and over and over again that I have an incredible ability to, I'm very inventive. I've used tools in ways people are like, whoa, I've never seen anyone use that tool like that before. And whoa, you just jumped in there and grabbed that. Like, that was amazing. You know, how did you know to just do that? And like all these different kinds of comments I've gotten from people that I've worked with. And I feel like a lot of those qualities are due directly to my upbringing. And some of them maybe are just natural, but I feel that some of them probably would have been lost had I been in the kind of normal childhood scene. And I feel like I'm trying to tie those things together because it's really hard to explain, but the way that my mom saw me is what allowed me to maintain those things in a sense. So yeah, it was like the relationship is what allowed me to kind of blossom into those things. Because when you feel like someone's trying to fix or change you, you tighten and you close up.
Yeah.
And then like you restrict, you're restricted, you become restricted. There's this tightening. Whenever you feel judged or evaluated by someone, you can feel it in yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's so sad when I see today, like a lot of kids that grow up and they like don't talk to their parents anymore. They don't have a good relationship with them. And
because they don't feel safe.
Yeah, and the parents are like, but after everything I've done for you and all the sacrifices I made, and it's like your intentions were...
Yeah.
They were beautiful intentions, but your actions weren't the ones that would foster that relationship. And I love that your mom prioritized your relationship and that you were able to see that that you didn't take advantage of it in terms of like, you know, oh, well, I guess you're my friend, so then like I'm going to go take advantage of you. It just wasn't in your nature to do that.
Right. Well, and she wasn't playing a part with me. She wasn't playing a part. She wasn't like being, this was hard. It's hard to say this and not have it misunderstood, but it's kind of like she wasn't playing the part of a parent. She was just being herself.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes people do a lot of pretend with their kids, and they put on this persona that's not really real or natural to them because they think that's how a parent should be. And it's like you're teaching your kids to be fake.
Yeah.
You know, because you are leading by example, whether you're meaning to or not. And when you're putting on this persona of like, I'm the teacher, I'm the parent, I'm that, you start acting kind of strangely. Like, it's not natural. And I think that's why a lot of parents are totally exhausted, because they're not being themselves with their kids. So how is your kid going to learn to be themselves if you're not being yourself with them?
Yeah.
If you're putting on this act for them, you're putting on this show also for other people. When you're around other people, you're putting on this show trying to be this good parent. It's like your kids know when you're being real.
Yeah, and that's why
When you're being real with them.
I feel like a lot of parents also probably give up a lot of the things that they also naturally loved and enjoyed. And if they could somehow reconnect with that and share that with their kids, I feel like it's good for kids to see that their parents love things, because it teaches them how to love something. And that's a mistake I made, was I didn't share the things I was loving and passionate about because my kids weren't passionate about the same things. So I didn't share with them. But then in the few moments that they would eavesdrop and hear me talking about it, they would be like, Mom, I didn't know that you loved like the body and the human body and disease. I was kind of curious about that too. And I was wondering about the whole coronavirus. And now that my son knows that I love the human body and all that stuff, now he's been asking me a lot of questions about the immune system. And he wants to know about how the immune system works and how different diseases are spread. And now there's like a whole new level of collaboration happening with us. I feel like I could have never fostered that with like a curriculum or with manipulating. So it's, I feel like it's so important for us to, as parents, also share our own interests so that we are being genuine with our kids. I feel like that could be a very easy way to reset.
unless you're doing it on purpose with an agenda.
Yeah, I agree.
So if you're going at your kid with this idea, like, I'm going to share my interest so that my kid will share their, that's not going to work, because they'll smell it on you. They smell it on you.
Yeah.
They know when you're trying to trick them into something, or you're trying to manipulate. They can smell it on you. So it's about like trying to remove all those ideas of how you should be so that they'll be a certain way.
Yeah. And prioritizing the relationship. Because I feel like if you really
are prioritizing it. And just being yourself, and being natural and living your daily life naturally together. It's very different than coming up with ideas and how to get them to open up, or how to, it's like, no, you do it. You be how you want to be. Be yourself, be true to yourself, and they will be too.
Yeah, and get on the
phone. And be the kind of, and be the kind of friend that you want to have.
Yeah, like the friend that gets on the floor and plays Legos with you. Like, I feel like if I was a kid and I liked Legos, then I would want a friend to get on the floor and play Legos with me too. Or, you know, like, I wouldn't want them to sit on the couch and be like, okay, you have 30 more minutes to play Legos, and then it's time for you to get stop playing Legos and come do this workbook.
Yeah, that's super irritating.
Like, you are not my friend.
Right. Yeah, but also, you know, I think that that's one of the things is, like, you know, mom did totally play with us, and she was engaged, and she was, you know, but I've seen with kids that I've babysat, I knew this one mom who, she was constantly exhausted, and she would hire me to babysit just so that she could just, like, get a break and go out with her friends or whatever. And her little girl was like 3, and she was precious, and I had a great time with her. But I recognized too that the mom was really different around her kid than she was when her kid wasn't around. And that she was really weird and teachy and acting and like, okay, I'm gonna play dolls with you now. And then she was like pretending and felt like she had to be constantly entertaining her kid. Hmm. And instead of just living life and being natural with them. So there's also kind of finding that balance of like, I don't really know how else to say it. It's just about like being real and being yourself, because yeah, that's what everybody wants. And if you want your kids to be comfortable being themselves, you have to be comfortable being yourself. And this mom was like really tired. And I was like, yeah, that looks exhausting to be like pretending and acting all the time, and to be like, okay, now we're playing together. And now I'm cooking dinner. I can't play with you. And it's like making everything separate and putting things into all these different categories. Like, this is what learning time is. This is play time. This is meal time. This is, and it's like for children and in my household, it all just ran together. Like everything was everything. There was little bits of everything in everything. Like we didn't have these separate sections of the day and categories of life, because life is all mixed up and intertwined.
Yeah.
So it was like you can be playing and cooking dinner together, or they can be playing and you can be cooking dinner, or, you know, it's just like you don't know what it's gonna look like. That's just how it is, like, right? Moms are exhausted. But there's a difference. It's kind of like when I was working in Flash Shop Gallery, I used to do sales in front of house working in the gallery with customers. And I would come home and I would be so mentally fried from the constant interaction and putting on this persona of this like happy, cheerful, entertaining sales girl and trying to sell stuff. And then I would also some days work in the back in the studio blowing glass and be like sweating and heavy lifting and high adrenaline and really hard physical work. And I would come home wiped out physically, but at peace.
Yeah.
And calm and happy. And so there's different kinds of exhaustion. And that's what I'm talking about, is it's like, you shouldn't have to be mentally and emotionally exhausted from being around your children.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you really should, powerful.
You know, you don't have to be. It doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to be mentally fried from being with your own children.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good. And I feel
that only comes from pretending, from putting on a persona that's not true to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been so, so fun to talk to you, Summer. I could talk to you the entire night. Like, we were supposed to only talk for like 40 minutes and we're still going. I love it.
Oh, I know. It's my favorite topic. And I feel like if I can make a difference for one mom out there to have a little more joy with her children, be a little more present and a little more peace in their life, then that's all I want.
Well, when are you going to write your first book is what I want.
Oh, who knows? I'm working on it.
Well, for any listeners that want to know like where they can find you and the things you're writing about, you have a page called A Life Without
School. I do. I have a Facebook page I recently started called A Life Without School. So you can look me up there. You can follow me. I occasionally make little videos talking. I do private calls, I do Zoom meetings. I actually have a Zoom meeting coming up this weekend about de-schooling. And so I offer different things like that. And I also just post things I've written, experiences, thoughts, stuff like that. So yeah, follow me.
That's awesome. And is your jewelry and the things that you make and sell also on that page, or do you have a separate page?
No, I have a separate page. I have a business page. I have an Instagram, I have a Facebook, I have an Etsy shop in there, and I have a website. It's Mermaid Art Glass.
Okay, Mermaid Art Glass. I'm gonna I'm gonna message you after we hang up, because I want to get all those links so that if people do want to check it out, they can find you easily in the show notes for the podcast. Okay, that is all I have for you guys today on this episode of the Homeschool Conversation Podcast. But if you are curious about how you can reach Summer and follow more of her stories, you can find her on Facebook at A Life Without School. And if you'd like to check out any of the jewelry that she makes by hand in Hawaii, you can search Mermaid Art Jewelry, and I will have all of those links in the description box of this podcast. So until next time, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope it encouraged you. See you later.